The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Preston Dennett began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986 when he discovered that his family, friends, and co-workers were having dramatic, unexplained encounters. Since then, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He is a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of over 30 books and more than 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. Several of his books have been Amazon UFO bestsellers. His articles have appeared in numerous magazines, including Fate, Atlantis Rising, MUFON UFO Journal, Nexus, Paranormal Magazine, UFO Magazine, Phenomenon Magazine, Mysteries Magazine, Ufologists, and others. His writing has been translated into several different languages, including German, French, Portuguese, Russian, and Icelandic. He has appeared on numerous radio and television programs, including Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell, Coast to Coast, and also the History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs and UFO Hunters and Ancient Aliens. His research has been presented in the LA Times, the LA Daily News, the Dallas Morning News, and other newspapers. He has taught classes on various paranormal subjects and lectures across the United States. Preston was a guest on this show back in June of 2023, and I'm happy to have him back on. So hello, Preston.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate it. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Not bad. I keep busy.
Good. So tell us about the events in your life that led up to your interest in the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, I kind of still shake my head in wonder about it because it's definitely something I never thought I'd ever be doing. I was pretty young. You know, 1986, I was 21 years old, but a skeptic, really completely skeptical about UFOs. But November 17, 1986 came along and there was an amazing sighting, which is now a classic in this field, I think. You may have heard of it, JAL Airlines. Captain Kenji Tarochi was flying a commercial Japanese airliner.
Oh, yeah.
Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great case.
Yeah.
Very well verified, lots of witnesses. Of course, the news did talk about it, but it was very short. I kind of just joked about it. It was a little bit awkward and moved on. But I remembered my older brother Mark had said he'd seen a UFO a few years earlier. probably like 5 years earlier. And I didn't believe him then, and I wasn't sure I believed him at that point, but I was interested enough to ask him about it. And boy, did I get a shock when I found out that, he did have a sighting of a classic, flying saucer with little lights, a dome, metallic, silent, chased it down the street with his two friends. But not only him, I had a couple of other family members. Let's see, two sister-in-laws. Turned out some of my later nephews would have encounters. But back then it was just my brother and a couple of, future wives, I guess you would say, girlfriends. But we had several friends, family friends who had had encounters. I was working, of course, at the time, going to college, and found out that people I'd worked with were having encounters as well, or had had encounters.
So a lot of your relatives that had a income.
And I don't know that it's that unusual. It might be because some of them have had very close encounters. I mean, my little sister had a missing time encounter. So did my sister-in-law.
Tell us
So,
about those.
yeah, I'll start with my sister-in-law. She had a sighting over Van Nuys Air Force Reserve Base back in, this was the late 1970s. Had two friends with her. It was just kind of unexplained lights. She said that they were moving around. I talked to her friend. He's like, "No, I think they were attached to each other." Everyone gave slightly different descriptions, but it darts off, and it was just a short time later, a few months. She decides to take a walk outside her home. This is in Van Nuys, very densely populated suburban area outside of Los Angeles, California. And she took her dog, Sarah. She had found an abandoned shopping cart near her home, and she wanted to go retrieve it, which was 3 or 4 blocks away. And she got it, and she's taking this shopping cart down the street. This is almost at midnight, right? And she's walking by Stagg Street Elementary School, tiny little elementary school. And it's got a big floodlight right in front of the courtyard there. And she saw two, what she thought were kids, standing right under the floodlight. She's on their side of the street, so she's going to walk up right next to them. And as she's doing that, she's looking at them. She's thinking, well, gosh, these don't look like kids because they have no hair. Could they be wearing costumes? It was like summer months, June or July. I was like, well, no, probably not a Halloween costume. This makes no sense. It was weird because they were standing very close to each other, facing each other, but weren't kissing or anything. They're just standing still. She said they were quite short, 5 feet, max, maybe 4 to 5 feet tall. So it was just getting weirder and weirder. And she got right up next to them, 10 feet away. When they turned, she says it was almost as if they floated, like 2 or 3 inches off the ground. Looked at her. And she's an artist. She's got a great eye for detail. She's got an incredible eidetic memory. And she remembers things in detail. And she started to describe grays, as we know it, gray ETs. She'd never heard of grays, really. There was nothing in the media at that time about, gray aliens. But she described them from head to toe, olive green jumpsuits with mandarin collars, real thin necks, huge kind of oval shaped heads, large dark wraparound eyes, almost no mouth and nose, and so forth. And she says it was like being woken up when you're awake. It was that shocking. And her dog didn't react, and she didn't want to completely panic because she's like, these are not humans. So she quickly walked past the school, ditched the shopping cart because it was slowing her down, and walked away without looking back.
When you say like woken up while you're awake, what does that mean?
She said it was, I mean, she knows she was awake, but she said it was so incredibly shocking that her belief system went right out the window.
I see.
She had no idea that there were non-humans walking around. I asked her, what did you think they were? It's like, I don't know. I didn't have any theories. I had no go-to. She didn't really think, oh, ETs, because that just wasn't in her worldview. So it was incredibly shocking for her, and she kind of just shelved it and put it in a box and didn't talk about it.
Wow.
And it wasn't until, I'm like, UFOs are real, ETs, ETs, that she shared her sighting with me and then very reluctantly shared that. She's like, well, I might have something else. I'm like, what? And she's like, well, I don't know if you I should tell you. I'm like, no, tell me. I may have heard of this. Of course, by then I hadn't picked up a number of books.
You say
So
you hadn't. You hadn't.
I had.
Oh, you hadn't.
Yeah, I had just started picking up books because I wanted to disprove this. I wanted to tell everyone you're seeing swamp gas. This isn't real. You must have imagined this. You're hallucinating. I needed another explanation, and there was none. So, I mean, it was as shocking for me in some ways as I think it is for your average witness. Because I don't know, for me, it just hit me real hard. It was in my family. People I loved and trusted had not told me about this. I felt a little bit scandalized. I don't know if there was a government cover-up. That really made me angry because those are my tax dollars and I needed it. I was working, going to college. I had no money. And to find out that my money is being, used to make witnesses look like fools and idiots and liars, I was not happy about it.
What do you think the purpose of that government cover-up is? What do they have to be afraid of? Or are they afraid?
I think from a military perspective, military viewpoint, I can see why that would be concerning if you have these objects coming over your nuclear power stations and shutting down missiles and hovering over, dams and air force bases and outdistancing your fastest aircraft. And I mean, that's got to be concerning because clearly you can't protect against them. I think we need to. I don't think they're out to hurt us. But I think that's part of it. I think, honestly, now that I've done my research and looked into it and found out about the Roswell crash and all the other UFO crashes and the cover up that really began since before the 1940s, really, but really was set locked into place by the time Roswell came along in 1947, the Roswell crash. That's a policy they adopted from the beginning, and they've continued it, and they've painted themselves into a corner. It's very hard to reverse 180 degrees a policy that's been set in place for that long without a paper trail, without any elected officials having any control over it. It's the military-industrial complex who's clearly behind this, intelligence agencies. So that's another reason. I think ultimately the real reason is simple. I think it's greed, power, money, control. Because I think we do have this hardware. I think we have enough whistleblower accounts to say that we do have these craft in our possession, the technology, reverse engineering, these sort of things. That's a big deal.
You think we've reverse engineered some of their weapons, or do they have weapons?
Well, from a contactee perspective, that's where I focused my research. I've interviewed hundreds of people who've had this kind of experience and talked to ETs and had extensive interactions with them. Some have been told that no, they don't really have weapons or need them because they can protect themselves using, light technology and magnetic repulsion fields and this sort of thing. But I have no evidence that they have bombs or guns or anything like that. But they do have technology, and looking at some of the whistleblower accounts, like healing technology is a good example. That was the subject of my first book, UFO Healings, which was being ignored by the mainstream UFO community even. I found over 100 cases of people who've been healed. I'm like, well, this isn't getting any attention. But I found some whistleblower accounts where people talked about, people in the know talked about technology being pulled from craft that involves little handheld lasers that can open and close flesh wounds or reverse aging to a certain extent. I mean, locate tumors, do all kinds of healing that is well beyond our own abilities. So I think that's another reason, because the pharmaceutical industry, let's face it, is extremely lucrative.
Tell me.
Illness is a business, and if they had, if technology was released that made cancer, obsolete, well, they're going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
So why would they do it?
Do you think there is a cure for cancer and that type of thing?
Well, based on the ET's ability to cure conditions, I think so, yeah.
I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to We Are Not Alone on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're speaking with investigator Mr. Preston Dennett. So, Preston, I was going to ask you, have you ever had your own personal encounters or experiences?
I sure have. Yeah. Now, this isn't my family. So, as we know, this is a phenomena that sort of tracks family lines.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to realize this is happening to our family or my family, my extended family. My brother Marco, turns out after his encounter, he did find this little implant type thing in his arm.
Okay, backing up now. We're jumping ahead, I think. Mark had an encounter, yes?
Yes, he did. And I thought it was just a sighting. Now I'm wondering, because I've come to realize when anyone sees a UFO within a couple of 100 feet, and he did, I mean, it was about 100 feet away, there's a really good chance there's deeper levels of contact going on here. And I'm thinking he might have had a full-on missing time encounter, because this is when this object appeared in his arm, which he could palpate with his fingers, and it was about the size of a half match stick. And you could push it around and see it, underneath his skin. I'm like, Mark, I'm taking you to a doctor who happened to be a doctor I knew who was a field investigator for MUFON. And I took him to visit him personally. And I showed him, and he went, oh my God, that is definitely a foreign body. We did not get it x-rayed. Marco was reluctant to do that.
Really?
But it certainly was, there was no entry wound. It was not a bone spur or anything. It was asymptomatic. And one day it just disappeared. But I wonder about it. Because, so, and then having, later, two nephews who had very close encounters. One had a humanoid come into his room. My sister-in-law saw humanoids. Started to dawn on me that, this is in our family. And after finding out UFOs were real in 1986, it was one thing to read books about this and talk to people. I wanted to see UFOs myself. So I was going out or into the field where UFOs were being seen, where I was getting reports. And I started to see unexplained lights, anomalous lights, which were clearly not anything explainable as conventional aircraft or satellites or anything like this, but were still lights to me. And finding out UFOs were real made me a little bit more skeptical and jaded and discerning. So I really wanted something that was unequivocal, not ambiguous. And finally, it did happen where this was during a wave of sightings I was investigating in Topanga Canyon, ironically or synchronistically, where I grew up. Topanga is right located outside of LA along the Southern California coast. And on June 14, 1992, a bunch of people started calling the police station and the local newspaper office reporting encounters. And this ended up including the entire gamut of encounters as we think of them, first, second, third kind, and so forth.
Yeah.
Cars being chased down the road, objects landing, people being pulled on board, sightings, of course. All kinds of encounters. So I'm in the middle of investigating this wave of sightings. It had literally just began about a month earlier. And it was June 14th when it really sort of kicked into gear, this wave of sightings. And it was July 5th that I was at my brother's house, Mark, and his wife, Christy, who had had encounters with little blue beings as a kid. And I said, it's late. I've got to go home. And I'm I had just left their house in Woodland Hills. I was going to go to the neighboring community of Canoga Park, 5 miles away, where I had a little condo that I lived in. And no sooner did I leave their house, I mean, maybe a minute or two, it's a tiny little street called Golondrina, but I came around this corner and stopped my car because this light swooped down right in front of my windshield. Now, it wasn't craft, it was a little ball of light, about the size of a golf ball or so, a little bigger. But it was intelligently controlled. There's no doubt about it because it stopped right in front of my face. And when something like this happens, you go through all these theories. You're thinking, is this a firecracker? It's July, right? No. Is it a bird? Is this a reflection? What's going on here? But it was a little ball of light. And it moved back and forth, stopped again, zoomed forward, went up, and my memory was wiped. I had no memory of it at all until about 2 months later, 4 months, I'm not precisely sure. But it just dropped into my head that this happened. So I had missing time, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, and that year was a big year for me because a month or two later, I had another sighting. A month after that, I had another sighting. Those were anomalous lights again. But I would later see a craft that was metallic for sure, kind of V-shaped, little lights on the bottom. Having dreams of being on board a craft, which were very vivid and definitely not normal dreams. This was, I'm convinced, memories of
I was going to
perhaps.
say, are you sure they weren't memories?
Yeah, I think they were because I ended up studying dreams intently because I started having out-of-body experiences as well, which I found out, is connected to all of this. So these were not what you would call your normal sort of very changeable, bizarre dreams. They followed a narrative and eventually did wake up one evening, and this was just a year or two later, to what I thought was a cat walking across my bed, which is all well and good, but I don't have a cat. I don't have a cat, so this can't happen. I'm in a condo building that's secure on the third floor. Doors and windows are closed. There's just no way. So I opened my eyes. I lay on my side and I instantly saw a figure that was very thin. It's real dark in my room. It's at night. And second I saw it, it darted away faster than a human can move. I haven't talked to people who talked about grays, darting around. Oh my gosh, well, there it goes. And I watched it actually turn the corner out of my bedroom into the entryway and into the living room. I think you jump up and go run after it, right? I did not do that. My heart raced real fast and I turned over and went back to sleep, which, having talked to a lot of witnesses who've had this kind of experience, they would tell me similar things about how they reacted. Which is not the way you think you would.
I know, I
And
know.
so there it was happening to me. And it kind of just ramped up from there. Lots of UFO dreams. And finally, a full-on conscious onboard encounter where I was taken on board. And I was awake. And that was fairly recent. That was like 2021, 22.
What happened in that conscious
Yeah,
about
that one I haven't discussed much.
that's
But
discussion?
I'll tell you, I've no, you know, I'm fully truthful and transparent when it comes to my own experiences and the research I've done. So I think this is an important subject. I know it's widespread. It people deserve to know the truth. And what happened to me was I was asleep in bed, dreaming, and I was dreaming that I saw a UFO. And this was just a dream. It was a massive UFO. But suddenly I'm pulled out of that and I'm awake and I am flying up out of my house on this beam of light. For lack of a better word, that's not really accurate. It's more like an energetic, I don't even know how to describe it. But it was very powerful. And I kind of remember doing this when this happened. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's happening again. I am being taken on board and I am awake. And it lasted a good 30 seconds, which is a long time. And having had some OBEs, out-of-body experiences, I thought, is this an out-of-body experience? Because it sure doesn't feel like one. This feels real. I thought, well, I'm being taken and I'm excited. This is unbelievable. And next thing I know, I'm coming up, I'm on a table. And there's a lady looking down at me who's not fully human. She's half gray, half human. She's quite tall, very pale skin, huge, beautiful eyes, blonde hair.
Almond-shaped black eyes.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure that they were black. I think that, in fact, they were almond shaped, but they were bluish eyes,
Oh,
actually.
okay.
Interesting.
Half bred, huh?
Yeah, very pale skin, very small features. She could not pass on Earth for a normal person or
Okay.
even a deformed person. She was beautiful. I mean, she was absolutely exquisite, but not human. And dressed in a white jumpsuit. And there are short little figures around me who I'm not really looking at because I'm looking at her. And she keeps asking me if I'm okay. And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm trying to get up because I want to look around. And they're like, no, lay down. We need to make sure you're all right. And I said, I'm fine. I'm fine. I've done this before. And finally, they're like, okay, get up. And I stood up. And man, oh man, because I'm in a room that's, having talked to so many people and about this, it's a completely different thing when you're there. This room is big. It's as big as a house, but it's one room and it's rounded. The floor is real smooth. There's a bunch of people in there. Some humans, some are absolute ETs. I make a beeline for the ET. I have no fear of this. It's completely benevolent. I can just feel absolute assurance. I don't know how to put it, but I knew I was fine. And there was a tall gray who was probably 7 feet tall. And she tilted her head and she looked at me and she's wearing a little smock. She is a gray, with the dark eyes. And she looked at me and she said, "So, is this what you thought it would be?" I said, "No, it's not. It's much better." Because this was a dream come true for me, having,
Literally, huh?
I mean, this was so cool. I cannot even express how cool it was. I'm like, can I explore? And she's like, go ahead. And I went to the other side of the room. This room had picture windows all the way around, like a cruise ship that were slightly tilted at a 45 degree angle, and you could look down, and I could see the Earth way the heck down there. I'm like, wow, we are out in outer space. I walked back into the center of the room because there was people there who are humans, and I wanted to talk to them, and they wouldn't talk to me because they were in a daze. They were entranced. They
Right.
couldn't. They weren't clicking to it for whatever reason. So I think some people have a lot of fear.
Yeah, there was fear, so they kept them. The ET kept them in a
Yeah.
trance so that they wouldn't panic. But it didn't seem like it seems like you were so accustomed to it, they allowed you to remain conscious.
Yeah. Something along those lines, I would say is accurate. Yeah. So I think they do want people to be conscious, but they're not, if you're in a panic state, it's not to your benefit.
Right.
But I saw couple of full-on ETs standing over there, and that gave me a little gulp. But they were different. They were, I don't know, just I guess the shorter grays, and for some reason the tall, gray was very nurturing and loving and comforting. And I saw another lady standing by the window, and she was fully conscious and she was smiling. And so I walked over to her and looked out the window, and that's when the ship dropped down to the earth in 1 second. And she went, woo, because it's a ride. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah.
suddenly we were on just above the ground, about, I don't know, 6 feet, and the ship rocked slightly. And you could feel it, you know, because you didn't feel the acceleration or deceleration when it drops down. But when it's hovering there, it rocks very much like you're on a boat, is how it felt. That was just so cool. The whole thing was really cool.
Would you say that you didn't feel it rocking when you were in outer space, but once you're in the gravitational pull of the Earth, now because of gravity, you could feel that rock? Is that possible?
I hadn't really thought of that. It was slightly less than normal gravity. You felt light on board, even when it's down on Earth.
Yeah, but the craft itself was within Earth's
Yeah,
gravitational
that
pull.
could be. That could very well be, but I did feel the movement, and that honestly surprised me. I wasn't. There was, little surprises, even though you read, and talk to people. I would always imagine, when someone says a rounded room, I kind of imagined everything completely round. No, it's just kind of curves into the floor and ceiling. The ceiling was domed. It was very bright. There were no lamps or lights. This I had read about certainly and heard from people. But then the
So,
craft went right back up because I'm presuming they picked somebody up. I didn't see. I was very focused at what was happening because it's a lot to take in when something like this happens.
so it seemed like they picked somebody at, like a bus stop, came back and had
Yeah, they
another
were either
bus stop and picked
picking
somebody
someone up or dropping them off. I don't know.
up and goes back up, right?
Yep. And all in all, it was maybe a 5 minute experience because, I walked back up to this tall gray and she's like, "We would like you to drink this." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And it was a little, a tumbler, a little glass tumbler, very thick, glass is what it looked like. And it had a kind of a, not glowing, but a bright green liquid. And it was a little syrupy. And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I took a sip. And it was very subtle in taste, very Swedish and kind of like kiwi or lime, but very subtle. And I took just a tiny sip and they took it back. I'm like, "Wait, can't I have another sip?" And they looked at me like, "Are you okay?" Normally people don't do that. But I'm like, "Well, I want to taste it." So I really wanted to memorize it. So they gave me another sip and boom, I was out. I was waking up in bed immediately in the middle of the night, right? And I quickly wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it. Any details?
So it seems that taking a sip of that green liquid seemed to equate to your losing consciousness and waking up later in the bed, right?
Yeah. And I asked other, I'm in touch with a lot of contactees, and I know some who've had this experience. So I asked them about it. And Dolly Safran is one person I wrote a whole book about of her cases. And so she's the one I went to because she's described it. I did a whole article in one of my books, ET Drinks. I'm familiar with this. There's sometimes medicinal as well. Apparently, and sometimes associated with, helping you to forget or things like this. But I didn't forget. So I asked her about it. She's like, "Oh, no. They give this to you because there's a lot of gamma radiation when you're out there in space, and this helps prevent damage." And that's what that was. I'm like, "Oh." And she asked me, "What did it taste like?" And I described the whole experience to her. And she's like, "Yeah, no, this is all, yep, this is true." So I think it was probably along those lines. I can't convey to anyone the reality of the experience or how astounding it was for me, because it's a personal experience. It's very subjective, but no one's going to talk me out of it. It's my I had that experience and I know it's true.
You know when you're awake, when you're conscious,
Yeah, there's no doubt.
even though the experience is beyond belief, you still know you were conscious.
100%.
I remember you talking last time about Dolly and your book Symmetry,
That's
A
right.
True UFO Adventure. Why did, when you talk to Dolly about her, she's also a conscious experiencer, correct? And they have kind of educated her, the ETs have. And so I guess the questions are, why are they here? Where do they come from? And what is their agenda on this planet?
Yeah, I think, my own research, I think, has revealed pretty clearly why they're here. And it's certainly supported by other researchers like Barbara Lamb and John Mack and Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and Edith Fiori, all of them. People who focus, pointing towards them. Once, because there's a lot of general researchers out there who are studying sightings or landing traces or what have you. But again, I focus on contactees and why they're here. Well, they've always been here. So that's a difficult question to say why for sure, because the universe, as near as I can tell, is inhabited to a degree that's far more inhabited than I think we're giving credit to. It's busy out there. So it's not really so much why they're here, because they are here and they've always been here. But on the other hand, I think they do have what we would call a mission or a goal or an agenda. And, don't believe me? Look at the firsthand cases. This is what I advise people to do, because if you do, you get a very clear idea just based on what's actually happening to people. Because when a person is taken on board, they're physically examined. This is what most people describe. And ETs will always say, don't be afraid. No harm will come to you. You're going to be fine. We're not here to hurt you. And they'll pull you on board and physically examine you. And this is when about 20 to 30% of the time, or possibly a lot more, it's hard to say for sure, they're healed. They're certainly given a checkup. So there is a healing agenda going on here that is undeniable. There is not a major researcher out there who doesn't have healing cases. They all do. Bud Hopkins, John Mack, David Jacobs, Edith Fiori, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, Philip Mantle, all of them have healing cases. And I put out, that was the subject of my first book. I put out another, The Healing Power of UFOs, that has 300 cases. And it's across the line of all the conditions and illnesses and diseases you can think of. So that's clearly one of their goals, collecting genetic material, preserving life on Earth in all of its forms, because we see them collecting genetic material from plants and taking soil samples and all kinds of animals. And I mean, you name it. So that's undeniable. Another would be announcing their presence, because you can see this with major waves of sightings like Gulf Breeze, or the Hudson Valley Wave, or the Belgian Wave, or the Wave in France, 1954, or Topanga Canyon Wave, Phoenix Lights, you name it, Wytheville, Virginia. They come down in large numbers, show themselves to a lot of people. The schoolyard UFO encounters, like Rua, Zimbabwe, or Westall High School in Melbourne, Australia, or Crestview Elementary School. I wrote a book about that too, 100 encounters over schoolyards. I've got 100 more over drive-in theaters. There is an agenda to announce their presence. They do it to singly, to small groups of people, and occasionally to large groups of people. They want us to know they're here.
And yet all of these cases are they keep them down on keep them on the down low, the government does, and
They
just
try.
they try,
They've tried and failed, as far as I'm concerned, because we all know that this is going on. But
I have to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell. And this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're speaking with UFO investigator, Mr. Preston Dennett. Now, let's talk about your recent book, Not From Here, Selected UFO Articles It's a 5-book series now, so I assume these are standalone editions, or should we start with the first installment?
Do standalone. I think you can pick one of these books up and come away with a pretty broad understanding of UFO phenomena and extraterrestrial visitation and what's going on. Each is unique in their own way, but the whole vol series does focus on cases that are a little bit what we would call outliers, avenues of research that haven't been fully explored, perhaps, or are controversial, or reveal patterns to UFO contact that I think provide insights into the nature of UFOs and what's going on. So, like the first volume covered UFOs over mines, where UFOs come down and hover over gold mines and silver mines and copper mines, or land, and or phone call from an alien, which sounds crazy. There are a bunch of cases. I mean, Raymond Fowler has cases with Betty Andreasen. Bud Hopkins talked about this as well. And there's a bunch of researchers who have covered this. And I started getting cases, and that's what why I looked into it. And kind of fits into the fact that ETs can affect electronics in any way.
Oh, really?
But
Now,
yeah, UFOs over prisons, UFOs over graveyards, UFOs that track our technology. That's another thing they do. They're following our travel into space. So this latest volume covers things like that. Astronomers who've seen UFOs. I did a chapter on cases involving not one or two objects, like most people will see, three or four, even 10, but cases involving 50 or 100 objects in the sky at once. Not a lot of cases of that. Hasn't really been fully explored. So that was a chapter. I did a chapter on alien books. This really surprised me
Alien
because you
what?
don't books, like on my bookshelf behind me.
Oh, alien books. Okay.
Yeah, which you don't really think of that as being a thing that would necessarily be on board a UFO, but Betty Hill described it. She described a little blue book that she almost took off the craft. They gave it to her. And Betty Andreasen described this as well. And when Dolly Safran described it to me, I'm like, gosh, I know of other cases. And I ended up finding almost 20 cases. And they're almost always, Whitley Strieber had this happen, almost always described as being this metallic, jewel-like blue with glowing white pages. Some describe symbols and stuff inside. Others describe moving pictures, can interact with you. So it was a fascinating aspect of ufology that hasn't really been studied. Boy, was it interesting. And after I put that out, I got a bunch of responses from people who was like, oh my God, I don't tell people this because they kind of roll their eyes, but I had that happen to me. I'm like, wow, look at that.
Blue books.
Yeah. So this high strangeness aspect of, ET contact prevents people from sharing parts of their story. This is why it's so important that, as a researcher, you don't throw away evidence or ignore it or deny it.
No.
Because if people are having these experiences, you can bet there's someone else out there having the same thing happen to them.
Yeah. At least put it in Stanton Friedman's gray basket, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a whole line of back burners filled
Right.
with stories that I'm like, okay, that's going on the back burner until I get confirmation.
And typically, an investigator will get confirmation every great once in a while of something. They'll reach back into the back burner and they'll say, "Oh yeah, now it makes sense." Am I right?
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing I looked into this latest book was twins. Because every now and then, more often than you would think, I'd be interviewing a contactee and they said, well, I'm a twin. I'm like, oh, you are? Why did this is odd because this kept turning up. And it went beyond that because often they would say, well, I was a twin, but one of the twins disappeared from my mother's womb. I had that turn up a number of times. And that is very odd. Some have met their twin, I was starting to look at other cases that, are in the literature where people go on board and they see someone that looks just like them. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is this a clone? I'm like, probably not. Probably you're a twin. One was taken. This happens a lot. ETs, we know, are interested in genetics. When Ray Fowler did the Allagash abduction book, two of the witnesses, Jim and Jack Weiner, they're tw identical twins. And the ETs seem particularly interested in them. So I think they do have, a real strong interest in genetics. And it's so interesting because I started to realize, like, wait a second. When people see ETs, they often describe them as being so identical looking. They look
Clones.
like twins.
They
Yeah.
look like clones, yeah. Yeah. Not,
So,
which makes me wonder if they're not clones.
think
If
they're
they
twins, not so much clones, because I looked into that and I couldn't find any firsthand cases that where ETs have said they're clones.
Oh, well, that have said they're clones.
Yeah. The ETs will talk to you. That's why I love cases involving, like Dolly Safran, where someone's a fully conscious contactee and has moved past the fear. And most contactees will at least get some kind of message, which speaks to, again, their why they're here. Because generally it's to warn us about how we're treating the planet and each other, or the pollution and war and aggression and greed and corruption and destruction of the environment.
Right.
That's their main agenda is, you guys, nuclear proliferation, you are on the verge of destroying all life on this planet and yourselves. That's the number one message, really.
Yeah.
It's a big part of their goal.
So specifically, your latest book, Not From Here, Volume 5, is that it?
That's right. Yep.
Can you give us a couple of examples of what people will find in there?
Yeah, another one. I did a whole chapter on people whose dogs were taken on board,
Oh.
because I found quite a few cases of this. There was one gentleman from Louisiana who went out hunting with his dog Hunter Bone, and suddenly a UFO shows up, and his dog goes running towards the UFO, barking at it. Next thing he knows, he's on board. And he has your fairly typical encounter. He's examined. He's given warnings about war and nuclear proliferation and all this. He's like, "Where's my dog?" And they said, "Oh, there's your dog right there." And his dog was floating in the craft, paralyzed. And they said, "We're sorry. He tried to bite us. He's floating around like a stuffed animal."
Jeez,
Oh.
trying to fight us.
And found a number of cases where people, we're taken on with kids. Kids will say, "Can I take my dog with me?" This happened to Dolly Safran. This happened to a guy named Rado in Russia. This happened to a number of children who are like, "Can I take my pets with me?" And they're like, "Sure." Other people have, one guy, he went was taken on board, and the ETs wanted to examine his dog. They weren't so interested in him. He's like, "Well, okay, fine. Examine the dog." And they did.
Was this a conscious abduction on the part of the abductee?
Yep.
He obviously was conscious at the time if he was asking this question, "Can I take my dog?"
Most contactees, while they might have missing time, have some memory of being on board. It might take the form of flashbacks,
Right.
and it might be incomplete, but certainly most remember something. I do think hypnosis is a valid tool used correctly.
I was just going to
But it is
say,
controversial.
I was going to say that through hypnotic regression, a lot of abductees can recall their experience in more detail anyway. All
Yeah,
right.
and I'll support it. I would, I've talked to a lot of people and they've asked me, should I do this? I'm like, well, it's a last resort.
Really?
First, I would ask you to write down your experience in all detail that you can remember and keep going back to it. Go to an investigator, do a interview that's very back and forth and very detailed, because that brings out new details. Like, oh, I didn't, they'll ask you a question, suddenly, boom, meditate. After you write it all up, meditate on it and go back and look, and you can start to fill in more and you start to build a complete narrative. Even doing dream work, go to bed at night and say, I'd like to dream about this encounter I had. I have no memory of it. I have missing time. What happened? But Betty Hill, she remembered pretty much accurately her full onboard experience through dreams. And hypnosis just verified it. That's all. It didn't really provide a whole lot of new detail. And I don't recommend hypnosis unless a person is having a real hard time functioning in some way. If they are just absolutely obsessed with their encounter, if they're suffering from crippling anxiety or insomnia or something that's disrupting their daily life. Because some people I've talked to who've had hypnosis were a little disappointed.
So I take it that you have not had hypnosis.
I have not.
You have
I've
not.
certainly considered it. But you can do what amounts to self-hypnosis. That's what meditation is, except you're not running the risk of being having a narrative forced onto you from a researcher. Because hypnosis has proven to be unreliable in the wrong hands. There's a lot of studies of it where, like, this did not happen and we can prove it. And it's also been proven to be reliable as well. And the police have used it and gotten license plate numbers.
All right.
Remember that? I don't know if you remember that show MythBusters, but they
Yes.
test various theories. And one, I couldn't believe it. They were like, we're going to do hypnotic regression. They didn't tell their crew, but they staged an event without telling them of this guy coming into their office and just wreaking havoc. Cussing and going on and knocking things over and saying a few things and taking some objects and running out, all very quickly in the space of 2 or 3 minutes. And then they told the crew, write down whatever you remember, describe the man, what you can consciously remember. They had no warning. So they're like, gosh, I don't know, quite remember what he was dressed. I remember he had blonde hair or whatever, right? So they wrote it down. He said, okay, our show theme tonight is actually regressive hypnosis. We're going to put each of you under regressive hypnosis and see if you can pull out further details. And they did, and it was accurate. And it was astonishing because not only was it accurate, it was accurate down to unbelievable details of little tattoos and the order of events and the words spoken. It was very heartening. I mean, I'm like, wow, this is encouraging. This is good ammunition to those folks who say hypnosis creates false memories. No, used done correctly, it's very effective.
That harkens back to the Travis Walton affair, Fire in the Sky. And their hypnosis sessions that they all have the same story.
Yeah, it absolutely does work. But I did talk to a few, one guy I talked to, a medical doctor. He went under hypnosis. He's like, I was a little disappointed. Like, what do you mean? He says, well, yeah, I remembered stuff, but it was a hypnotically recalled memory and it felt kind of dreamlike. And I don't know if it's true. It feels a little ambiguous to me. It seems cliche. So
Is there are there any was there any evidence that has been presented for any of these stories in your books?
oh yeah, evidence is mountainous. It's absolutely conclusive at this point. I mean, in my own cases, I've certainly gotten a lot of evidence, but generally speaking, the evidence is 100% conclusive at this point in terms of radar returns and landing traces and films and photographs and medical evidence, healings. Like with Dolly Safran, her case is very extensive. And because she's got a lot to her story, I really vetted it hard. And she was able to provide not only corroborating witnesses, but medical evidence, which she showed me, and I can't make public because it's very private stuff. But certainly healings, I can, make reference to it. And she proved implants and other things like this. Film evidence. She's got some extraordinary film evidence. Another case I researched involved a woman who took her child to the dentist And they found this implant under his back molar. There's no entry wound. This is a cylindrical or a spherical shaped object, which is opaque under an X-ray. And the dentists, everyone in the office knew this was a foreign body. And I got the X-rays, multiple of them. And it's right, it's a big, almost the size of a marble under this kid's tooth. And I know a couple of doctors who are UFO researchers. One's an emergency physician and one's a general practitioner. So I sent it to both of them and asked for a diagnosis. And they're like, well, we really need to talk to the patient. I'm like, well, here's all the information. Patient does not want to talk. He's a kid. But I did speak with the mother and through the mother to him. And they both diagnosed it the same way. And it's a foreign body of some kind. It's not natural.
Did they try to remove it?
The oral, when the kid had his wisdom tooth removed, the oral surgeon really wanted to, and the kid said, no, I don't want you to do it.
Really?
So as far as I know, it's still there. I'm still in touch with the witness. He's now just got out of college. He was 14 years old, I think, when this happened.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about Skinwalker Ranch. You're familiar with the Skinwalker Ranch on History Channel?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, you can't be in this field without being aware of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Really? So there's a lot of evidence, at least looks like evidence, that there's other dimensional beings, other dimensional things at work here. Do you think that ET is ex other dimensional?
Well, yes, I do, but here's how I look at it. I think ETs are physical beings like us, with metallic craft that land and leave burn traces and landing marks and are being recovered by the military, and they're pulling people on board and they're not in their rooms. It's a physical thing going on here. And
Right.
I think there's enough evidence to say that this is conclusively true because people aren't in their rooms. Where are they? Where did this implant that has been removed come from? How are they healed? These babies, the whole missing fetus scenario.
Right.
But as far as interdimensionality, yes, I think they have an understanding of other dimensions and are able to make use of it. And if you talk to contactees, these craft and their technology are psychically sort of integrated. And this, because these craft often don't have, whole lot of equipment on board or engines or all kinds of stuff. They're flown psychically. And if you being interdimensional does not preclude being extraterrestrial,
No.
we ourselves are interdimensional beings.
Right.
And if you study humanity and all the supernatural and paranormal, like there are people who've reported levitation, walking through walls, telekinesis, invisibility, healing. You name it. These are all the things ETs do. So, yeah, they're interdimensional. All entities are. We will go to the other side when we pass on, and you can prove this yourself.
Right.
I mean, certainly you can research it with near-death experiences and deathbed visions and ghostly encounters and channeling and mediumship and so forth.
Anybody who's spiritual in any way or religious knows that there's another dimension.
Yeah,
So,
science has proven it as well. Quantum physics has basically proven other dimensions.
The book is Not From Here, Selected UFO Articles by Preston Dennett. And I'm afraid we're out of time, Preston, but I want to thank you so much for joining us on We Are Not Alone.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure and an honor. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell, reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.